High Five Casino lets you play your favorite slot and live table games, like blackjack, with the chance to redeem for real cash prizes. High Five Casino has a giant selection of over 1,200 games, including hundreds of exclusive games only found on High Five Casino. It's always free to play, and free coins are given out every 4 hours. Ready to have your own High Five moment? Visit highfivecasino.com. That's high, the number 5, casino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. Must be 21 years or older. Terms and conditions apply.
The Last Word on Today FM.
Joining us for the Culture Club, we have the author of an acclaimed debut novel, which is called Nesting. Roisin O'Donnell, thank you very much for taking the time to join us. Tell us a little bit about Nesting, please, the story in it.
Hi, Matt. It's lovely to be here. So Nesting is the story of a woman called Ciara Fey, who from the outside seems to have this perfect life. She's living in the leafy suburbs of Dublin, and she's married to a man called Ryan, and she has two little children, and everything seems to be okay. But behind closed doors, her life is completely controlled. You know, her husband has control of all the money. He won't allow her friends and family in the house. And, you know, she's been living in this for years, and she finally one day reaches breaking point. And she's in the garden with her two kids, and rather than going back in the house, she takes the washing from the line, takes the two children and gets in the car and drives away. And it's the story of how she attempts to rebuild her life from that point onwards, really. It started off as a short story, believe it or not. It's a short story that got out of control. It was inspired when I was asked to write a story on the theme of independence for radio. And I wrote a story, about a similar thing, about a woman called Ciara with her children who was living in emergency accommodation in Dublin. And when I'd finished writing the story, it was broadcast for radio by Siobhan McSweeney from Derry Girls. And that was great. But I just felt that the story wasn't really finished. And I wanted to know, you know, what would happen to this woman? Like, would she manage to completely break away from this toxic relationship? Or, you know, how would she find a home or not? And what would happen? And against my best intentions, I had to write a novel to find out. But as it took off, it became more sort of hopeful, and it became, you know, really about like the nature of freedom, you know, and kind of taking a risk to change your life for the better.
So your sort of character developed. Did you have an end point in mind for the story, or did that just happen as you were writing?
I didn't really have an end point. No, I think it was very, very character led, you know. When I used to write a lot of short stories for years before writing Nesting. And I used to, you know, because I'm working full time and I have little kids, and I didn't have that much writing time. So I would kind of carry the short story around in my head for a long time, and I would nearly have it completely worked out before I went to write it down. But you can't actually do that with a novel. You know, you can't carry a whole novel around in your head. So when I was writing Nesting, I actually had to embrace like that uncertainty of actually not knowing what would happen next. And I think that kind of served the story, because, of course, that's the position that Ciara is in. She doesn't know, you know, how she's going to get out of this situation, if she's going to get out of it, and what's going to happen. So it was sort of exhilarating in that way, you know, just really leaning into that process.
It's your debut published novel. It's not the first novel you've written, though, is it?
Oh, no. Who told you that? Yeah, you know,
But you started writing at a very early age, didn't
you? Yeah. I mean, I've always been a bit of a bookworm. You know, my mum is a great reader, and she had me enrolled in the library when I was, I think, weeks old, you know. And my first little stories that I wrote were before I could actually write. I used to tell my mum little stories to send to my granddad, who lived in Derry. We were in England at the time, and she'd write them down and send them. But yeah, when I was growing up, when I was a teenager, you see, I thought that if you wanted to be a serious writer, you had to write novels. I didn't really know about short stories so much, you know. So like when I was in my teens and, you know, early 20s, yeah, I had a couple of goes at writing these, you know, novels, but they were, you know, they were a disaster, really. Like I wouldn't have had the skills developed really to be able to do that at that point. And it was only then when I discovered the short story form that I think I learned so much really from writing short stories and working with different editors over the years, because I think the editing of it is so important, you know.
It struck me as well, though, in coming across Nesting, that it's a theme which actually is quite important in contemporary Ireland, because unfortunately, over the recent months, there's been an enormous amount of cases of women who have died at the hands of their partners, or charges have been laid against men who are facing trial in relation to the possibility that they were responsible for the death of a wife or girlfriend. It's a major issue in Irish society.
Oh, it is. It's a major issue. It really is. It's shocking. I mean, what are we on, you know, the 15th of January? And if I'm correct, I think there's two women have died so far this year, and we're 15 days into the year and we've already had, you know, two deaths. And it's horrific. It really is. And, you know, it was a difficult subject matter to research. I did a huge amount of research into it and talking to women who had experienced
Coercive control,
domestic abuse. And coercive control really is at the root of so much of this. And I suppose the shocking statistic is that so often, you know, when a woman does lose her life, that can actually be the first act of violence within the relationship. It's not always the case that it's been a pattern of violence that escalates. It's, you know, shockingly common that it's actually the first act of violence. But coercive control will have been there all along. And that was what I really wanted to explore, you know, especially I remember talking to an outreach worker from a refuge who agreed to meet with me. And, you know, it was a tough conversation and difficult, you know, to hear some of the things she was saying. But it was important, I think, as well, to make sure that nesting felt completely authentic. And she was talking just about the patterns of the way that, for example, technology has been used to monitor women and, you know, the elements of emotional abuse and, you know, manipulation, and how spotting the signs of these early on is really, really important. So I wanted to feed all of that into the book and to make sure that it felt completely real, because I just felt that from things that I'd seen on film and in books, that, I don't know, we don't always get a realistic depiction of what goes on, you know, when a woman is in an abusive relationship, and particularly when she leaves, you know. So often it seems to be that she just sort of drives off into the sunset and that's it. Whereas I knew, even from the very early research I'd done around the short story, that's not the case. That's actually the most dangerous time for a woman, is when she actually leaves a relationship like this, because, you know, a partner who's that controlling is not going to give up control very easily. So I suppose I just wanted to write something that would really feel authentic and validating, you know, to those people who know the reality.
Well, congratulations on Nesting. Let's get to your choices for the Culture Club. We start with every guest to give us the first piece of music they ever bought, be it a single or an album. And you remember well your first choice, do you?
I do remember. I mean, I think I'm right on this, but I have a distinct memory of going into HMV in Sheffield, where I grew up. And of course, back then it was all, you know, CDs, wasn't it? It wasn't, you know, streaming.
You're a lot younger than me, yes.
I know. No, it was all, you know, I remember going in and like buying a new CD was like a big thing, you know. But I remember buying an album by Ash, Free All Angels. And they're actually from Northern Ireland. I don't know if I even realised that at the time. They're from County Down. But I loved that, and I just remember like playing it on repeat.
Let's hear Shining Light.
In the air.
Cash and Shining Light from Free All Angels. Favourite album? Have you got one that you can nominate, or is that a very difficult question to answer?
It's difficult, you know. It's it changes a lot, I think. I just listen to a real mixture of things. And, you know how Spotify do the Spotify Wrapped and they tell you what you listen to the most in the last year? Well, apparently the song I listened to most was called Touch the Sky from Brave by Disney. And quite worryingly, I was in the top 0.01% of listeners worldwide. So from that, you can see that the little women in my life, age 6 and 8, clearly control the airwaves. But when I do get a chance to choose the music, I suppose I grew up listening to things like Bruce Springsteen. My mum loves Bruce Springsteen, and, you know, I love, yeah, sticking on his albums and we'll have a bit of a dance, you know. I really like Jessie Ware as well. I think that just brings back memories of kind of college days, or, you know, late 20s, early 30s.
Where did you go to college?
I went to Trinity. Yeah, yeah.
Moved over from Sheffield to Trinity. That must have been a big change, was it?
Yeah, well, you see, my mum and dad are from Derry, and we grew up in Sheffield, but like a lot of Irish people abroad, I suppose they always kind of wanted to move home. And my dad got a job in Dublin then when, I was just 18, so I was starting college anyway. So the whole family moved over to live near Dublin. It's funny, it's like I moved to college but brought my whole family with me. it worked out well.
Let's hear a little bit of Jessie Ware from the Tough Love album, Cruel. Cruel by Jessie Ware from the Tough Love album. You also mentioned one that you picked up in Brazil during your travels.
I love traveling, and I was in Brazil years ago now, and the music is really cool over there. And I just remember one artist, DJ Avan. His music is
what type of music?
Lovely.
How would you describe it?
I don't know. It's different to anything Irish, really. It's sort of nearly like that samba sort of feel to the beat to it, I suppose. But some of those lyrics are absolutely mad. Do you want to hear a really mad one?
Go for it.
Okay. So one of the lyrics is, "It's easier to learn Japanese in Braille than to understand what you're thinking."
Okay, I'll try and work that one out.
Yeah, I just remember someone translating that one and thinking, okay, that's definitely unique. That's going to stick in my memory for sure.
Because when we asked you to name favourite band, you did come up with some, but you did mention that you're trying to broaden your musical tastes at present.
I am, yeah. No, I definitely am. As I said, you know, my kids have been controlling the music. It has to stop.
You've got to control for them. They've got to be coming on something like this in 30 years' time and saying they were listening to loads of music that you picked for them,
yes.
Rather than having Disney dictate for you.
Exactly. I'm going to go home and say that to them now. But my sister is really musical. My sister Alice, she's brilliant. She's a fabulous singing voice herself, you know, and she listens to all sorts of stuff. So she's trying to, you know, introduced me to some different bands. So I've recently discovered Amble. I think they're really good. Just that folksy sort of sound. I really like that.
Well, let's hear Lonely Island by Amble.
I roam alone on the island. I can hear your voice in my mind. I can feel the cold, cold of your hand. I am lost, you're one of kind. The water's not as blue as it first was. It's no longer the island of sun. Mountains are taller than ever before.
It's lovely. That's Lonely Island by Amble. Is that representative of the music?
That's beautiful. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You also mentioned the likes of Wild River and Morgana. Tell us about them.
Yes, I like both of those. Yeah. Wild River, again, is that sort of just, kind of mellow kind of sound. I really like that. And Morgana, just her voice is unbelievable. Just so powerful. And I just think she's really good. She was with a band, Saint Sister, with Gemma Doherty. And she's done a solo album now. And I'd love to see her in concert.
Well, what about the gigs you have been at? What are the standout ones that you want to remember?
Well, I sort of got out of the habit of going to gigs for a long time, I have to say, But, ones that really stand out in my memory, I remember going to Longitude years ago. I remember going to Longitude in 2013 with my friend Una and my sister. And we saw Jesse Ware and Tom O'Dell and Jake Bugg. It was a really brilliant lineup. I just have this memory of this beautiful summer day. And it was just a really, really lovely time. And we went again to Longitude in 2014. And we saw Hozier and Sam Smith and some of those artists, they weren't like, say, as famous as they are now. Like, Hozier, I suppose, was fairly well known, but not at the scale he is now. And it was, it was lovely. I think Longitude has changed a lot now. But back then it was, we really, really enjoyed it. But it's something I'd love to get back into, I suppose, going to more gigs. I don't know. It's funny how you can kind of get out of the habit of it, I suppose.
What age are your children again?
Well, they're 6 and 8. So I suppose
that's the reason why you're not going to many gigs.
There's that. But I do think as well, though, Matt, the cost of living and everything like that, like it is, it is tough and it is an expense, isn't it?
Ticket prices for concerts are amongst the most expensive things.
It is, But I am actually going to a concert for the first time in ages. My sister is bringing me, this is a Christmas present now, she's bringing me to Irish Women in Harmony at the National Concert Hall for Women's Day on March the 8th. So I'm really looking forward to that. So there's Moya Brennan and Una Healy and Lyra and, loads of really great singers. So I'm looking forward to that.
Well, we have a clip from the Longitude that you were at back in 2014. Okay. The decent enough quality is we've taken it from YouTube. This is Sam Smith singing Lay Me Down. Sam Smith, Lay Me Down at Longitude in 2014. So let's move away from the music, Roisin, and movies. We asked for a favourite movie, actor or director. You've gone for Erin Brockovich, starring Julia Roberts. For those who may not have seen it, what's all that about?
Well, it's based on a true story. And it's about a woman who, she's a single mom and she is desperately looking for a job and ends up working for this law firm as a very sort of low-level clerk. And
she doesn't sort of have the accent or the manners that you might expect for a legal firm either.
Yes, she's seen as being very sort of working class and she stumbles upon all these documents that is basically uncovers a massive cover-up by this company, PG&E, who have been basically poisoning the water in a local town. and no one wants to take this case on. It's just a very small law firm that she's with, but she's absolutely adamant that they have to stand up and do something about it. And it's how the case unfolds. And I don't know, I just love it. I just think she's brilliant in that role. And it really does challenge stereotypes as well, I think. You know, you see the way that, say, even the other workers in the law firm sort of turn their noses up at her because of her social class and, you know, even the way she dresses and everything.
And chews gum and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
We have a clip from it. Let's hear Julia Roberts as Erin Brockovich.
Let's be honest here. $20 million is more money than these people have ever dreamed of.
Oh, see, now that pisses me off. First of all, since the demur, we have more than 400 plaintiffs in. Let's be honest, we all know there are more out there. They may not be the most sophisticated people, but they do know how to divide, and $20 million isn't shit when you split it between them.
Erin.
Second of all, these people don't dream about being rich. They dream about being able to watch their kids swim in a pool without worrying that they'll have to have a hysterectomy at the age of 20, like Rosa Diaz, a client of ours, or have their spine deteriorate like Stan Bloom, another client of ours. So before you come back here with another lame-ass offer, I want you to think real hard about what your spine is worth, Mr. Walker. Or what you might expect someone to pay you for your uterus, Miss Sanchez. Then you take out your calculator and you multiply that number by 100. Anything less than that is a waste of our time. By the way, we had that water brought in special for you folks. Came from Well and Hinckley.
Julia Roberts, possibly our finest performance in Erin Brockovich. Now, favourite play, theatre show or musical? And you told us that you really hate musicals. Why so?
Yeah, definitely. Well, you see, Matt, my first job was working in a theatre, taking tickets and selling ice creams when I was, I think, 18.
Was that in Sheffield or here in Dublin?
No, in Sheffield. Yeah, we were still living in Sheffield. And it was in the Crucible Theatre. Do you know
where they played the snooker?
The snooker, yeah. Yeah, where they have the snooker. But they also have a lot of other things. And there's the Crucible Theatre and the Lyceum Theatre is just next door, which is like your typical kind of old style theatre with the red velvet curtains and like very beautiful, you know. So I would have seen a lot of theatre at that time. It was a great first job, you know, in some ways. But there was a downside. I must have seen Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat more than 50 times, honestly.
That's a cruel and unusual punishment.
I'm still recovering from it. So I tend to just really not like musicals at all. But I do. I mean, I do like live theatre. I love seeing theatre. I remember seeing productions of Arthur Miller plays, The Crucible, actually, in The Crucible Theatre. And, you know, Shakespeare's Twelfth Night, I remember they put on one time as well. The Crucible is really cool. Well, you'll have seen it from TV with the snooker. It's like the audience is on three sides. So it's a great venue.
Favourite book or author? Who have you got? You've got a number that you want to recommend, and that's fair enough, given that you're a novelist yourself. So tell us, Claire Keegan, first of all, why do you pick Claire Keegan?
Claire Keegan, I just think she's brilliant. I mean, she's just someone who has been influential on me personally, I suppose, because when I was only starting out as a writer, I went to a number of workshops with Claire down in Carlow. And she's a real presence. You know, I love listening to the way she talks about writing. And she would have talked a lot about allowing your character to lead the story and following your character's steps. And I think that's what I really tried to do with Nesting, you know, like rather than imposing my vision on the story, just kind of allowing it to unfold. And I just think she's just a beautiful writer.
Well, recently, of course, the movie was made starring Cillian Murphy of Small Things Like These. But we actually have a clip from the audiobook to hear what's in the book.
In October, there were yellow trees. Then the clocks went back an hour and the long November winds came in and blew and stripped the trees bare. In the town of New Ross, chimneys threw out smoke, which fell away and drifted off in hairy, drawn-out strings before dispersing along the quays. And soon the River Barrow, dark as stout, swelled up with rain. The people, for the most part, unhappily endured the weather. Shopkeepers and tradesmen, men and women in the post office and the dole queue, the mart, the coffee shop and supermarket, the bingo hall, the pubs and the chipper all commented, in their own ways, on the cold and what rain had fallen, asking what was in it, and could there be something in it? for who could believe that there again was another raw cold day? Children pulled their hoods up before facing out to school, while their mothers, so used now to ducking their heads and running to the clothesline, or hardly daring to hang anything out at all, had little faith in getting so much as a shirt dry before evening. And then the nights came on, and the frosts took hold again, and blades of cold slid under doors and cut the knees off those who still knelt to say the rosary.
What grabs you out of that, Roisin? What is it about that?
See that last line there, the blades of cold. Isn't that good? Like, you can feel that, can't you?
Yeah.
You know, I think Clare Keegan's work really rewards rereading. You know, like, her books are fairly slim, like the more like novellas, really, but they really are the type of book that you go back and read it again, you see even more details and how it all kind of adds to the layers of meaning. I don't know. I just think that's wonderful.
You also have Edna O'Brien on the list, who, of course, died last year.
I know. Yeah. Such a
love. Was she somebody that you would have read from an early age?
I think I first discovered Edna O'Brien when I was at college, when I was studying English at Trinity, and I remember reading The Country Girls and just being so moved by it. And like, it's such a funny book as well, actually. There's so much humour in Edna O'Brien. But at the time, she really broke taboos, didn't she? And I really think, you know, as a woman writer, you definitely have that feeling of being, you know, that she, you know, the legacy that she left is so important.
And then tell us about Barbara Kingsolver.
Yeah, I love Barbara Kingsolver. Demon Copperhead is one of my favourite novels of recent years. I think what it is about her is the way that she can take like a social issue. Like, so Demon Copperhead is to do with the opioid crisis in America, you know, which is obviously like a very heavy topic. But she's able to take that and turn it into this really engaging story, which has this, you know, light and humour. And it's just, you know, it's just really well done. I suppose with Nesting, that's, you know, a little bit what I was trying to do, really, was to, you know, you have these topics, you know, the housing crisis and, you know, the, you know, course of control and everything. But ultimately, you're trying to tell an engaging story, really, at the end of the day.
Favourite television shows, and we always ask for what you watched as a child and what you watch now. And I see from what you watched as a child was, I think, set in Yorkshire. Sheffield's in Yorkshire, isn't it?
Yes, yeah.
All Creatures Great and Small.
Yes. You see, when I was a child, I loved animals. Well, I still love animals, you know, but I think as well as wanting to be a writer, I think I also wanted to be a vet. And I just remember watching James Herriot, you know, going to the rescue on these different farms and just, just being entranced by it.
Let's hear a bit. I think this is from the original because it was remade many years later with different people playing the parts. But this is Christopher Timothy playing James Herriot, going to a nearby farm to treat a lame cow, where the farmer has some alternative treatments in mind.
This here is very wet.
Well, it will be.
Oh?
Water.
Pardon?
Water, surely you've heard of that. If they'll not get up, try pouring a bottle of cold water down the lug oil. Old tricking me dad's with that. And we did know about stuck me dad.
I see. Did it have any effect?
It doesn't always work. Look, let's not muck about. Get a tail whipped off and let's have done with it.
And how is that going to help, Mr. Hanshaw?
Worm in the tail is obviously what's doing her.
There's no such complaint as worm in the tail, Mr. Hanshaw. That's just a popular myth.
Every cow I've ever seen's got up damn quick when she's had her tail off.
Well, she would. Wouldn't you? The pain must be quite excruciating.
New at this game, are you?
Reasonably.
Aye.
All Creatures Great and Small. And then... Have you picked the Jor-Els on Netflix as one of your adult favourites?
Yeah, that's a great series. It's based on the memoirs by Gerald Durrell, who was a great naturalist and botanist. And when he was this child, this is in the 1930s, just before the Second World War, his mum, who was a widow, moved the whole family to live in the Greek island of Corfu. And sure, they hadn't a penny to rub together. And it's all about, you know, just their struggles and, you know, how they go about setting up this life in the island of Corfu. And it's very funny, but, you know, it's sort of about like the build up to the Second World War as well. And I found it really good.
And then Derry Girls. Was this influenced by the fact that your grandparents were from Derry?
Well, my mum and dad are from Derry.
Oh, so your parents from Derry.
Yeah.
Sorry, yes.
And all my cousins and all my everybody's from Derry. Yeah. Oh, no, absolutely. Well, I just think it's a brilliant show. Anyway, but yeah, probably am a bit biased, but it's brilliant. I just think that the writing by Lisa McGee is just flawless. You know, the way that she captures, I suppose, both the political situation of what was going on with the Troubles at that time, but also just the, you know, the real life of being a teenager in the 90s. I suppose I can really strongly relate to that.
Let's hear a clip where Father Peter sets out to bond the Catholic and Protestant schools.
As some of you may know, I took a bit of a sabbatical last year.
Do you mean when you shacked up with a slutty hairdresser, but then she dumped you?
Miss Mallon, please. Raise your hand if you want to ask a question.
Okay, I think we should just move on.
The hairdresser certainly did.
Okay, so this is just a little exercise I like to kick off with.
Oh, give me strength.
I want you guys to give me examples of things that Catholics and Protestants have in common. And things that they don't have in common. Let's start with similarities. Erin, why don't you get the ball rolling?
Okay. So we both... Right. So we all... God, this is actually quite hard.
Anything at all, a small thing even.
Okay, so, right. God, I'm actually drawing a blank here, to be honest.
Not to worry. Someone else, a similarity. Yes.
Protestants are British and Catholics are Irish.
So that's actually a difference. Quite a big difference. If that's okay, we can write that down. Now, back to similarities. Yes.
Protestants are richer.
Okay, so that's another difference. And I'm not sure that's actually... I mean, is that true?
I would say so.
Yeah, I suppose that's fair enough.
Yes, great. Off you go.
Catholics really buzz off statues and we don't so much.
I do enjoy a good statue, it has to be said.
So again, what we have there is a difference.
Derry Girls.
Oh dear. It's very funny, that clip.
Last thing, we always ask every guest for something different, a cultural buried treasure that you would recommend to anyone, something that perhaps gets overlooked. And you've offered a book of short stories. Tell us about this.
Yeah, so there's a short story writer I love, Lucia Berlin. And I think she is more well known now than she used to be. But I just think, you know, she's brilliant. She was writing in really the 70s and 80s. And she's an American writer. And she only really kind of achieved fame really after her death, when a collection of her stories, A Manual for Cleaning Women, was published. But there's a collection of hers that I love, which I think is less known, and it's called Evenings in Paradise. And they're just beautiful stories, you know. Like, she had quite a difficult life, I think. And, you know, some of the stories are quite dark, but there's sort of this humour woven through them. And they just kind of, you know, just the characters just spring off the page. And there's some brilliant lines in the stories. There's one line I love from one of them where she says, "One moment can change your life, break everything or make it whole." And I always think about that when I'm talking to people about nesting. It's this idea that, you know, just the way that a minute can change everything. So I definitely recommend people checking out her.
And we'd recommend Nesting, the first novel of Roisin O'Donnell, who has been our guest on the Culture Club today. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Matt. It's been great.
The Last Word on Today FM.
High Five Casino lets you play your favorite slot and live table games, like blackjack, with the chance to redeem for real cash prizes. High Five Casino has a giant selection of over 1,200 games, including hundreds of exclusive games only found on High Five Casino. It's always free to play, and free coins are given out every 4 hours. Ready to have your own High Five moment? Visit highfivecasino.com. That's casino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. Must be 21 years or older. Terms and conditions apply.